Today's episode of Rob as a Podcast is sponsored by Texture, because Texture is the smarter way to do magazine subscriptions, because starting at less than $10 a month, Texture offers unlimited access to all of your favorite magazines for less than the price of three magazines at the grocery store, because Texture allows you to access them all digitally on your phone or via smart devices. I've got my Texture open right now. I could see all the different magazines that I can check out anytime and flip through the actual pages of those magazines. I could look at the Oscar edition of Entertainment Weekly. Oh, what's this about how Peyton Manning crushed Tom Brady's Super Bowl hopes? That might be a good read. Got ESPN, the magazine. I see Cam Newton ripping his shirt off. Everything that you want to read. Any magazine that you want to get on the newsstand, you could read. There's John Krasinski looking all jacked now, not like Jim from The Office anymore. If I want to read about how he did that, I can do it all on texture.com. You can browse hundreds of magazines or just cherry pick the articles that interest you the most. And the Texture editorial team recommends story for me on the daily. Plus, they curate collections to let me dive deeper into any topic. So the best part of all is that Texture is offering our listeners a free trial right now. When you go to texture.com/RHAP, think about it. You'll get unrestricted access to the world's best magazines, from back issues to the ones on newsstands today. Take advantage of the offer right now and go ahead and check out some serious magazine know-how with Texture for free right now at texture.com/RHAP. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we have got a very fun podcast today, because we're going to be speaking with the young lad, Spencer Bledsoe, to do a post-season interview from Survivor Cambodia. Of course, this is the fourth of these interviews that we're doing after the season, where we spoke with Stephen Fishback, we spoke with the winner, Jeremy Collins, we spoke with Kelly Wentworth, and now we're going to be speaking with Spencer. And I'm really looking forward to talking with Spencer and seeing how he's doing, because certainly in those couple times that we talked to him right after the season was over in those quick exit interviews, he definitely seemed like he was down about the whole experience. So hopefully he's feeling a little better as time has gone by. The other big thing we did earlier this week was our big cast assessment season preview. We went through 18 people, find out if Nicole will be right again with her latest pick of a winner. As we previewed the cast of Survivor Koh Rong, you could hear that at robhasawebsite.com. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, you could subscribe anytime. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes, or by searching for Rob Has a Podcast in your favorite podcatcher, or with the RHAP app at robhasawebsite.com/app. All right, everybody, I'm very excited about this. We were hoping that this was going to come to be ever since the finale, and I'm very excited to bring this person back to the show. Of course, he is your two-time Survivor. He is also your Kagyan fan favorite. He is your 2015 Mr. Survivor. Welcome back, the young lad, Spencer Bledsoe.
Hey, hey, what's up?
Spencer, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Doing pretty well. It's coming to be. It's all coming to be.
It's coming to be. And of course, Spencer is here to get ready. It is this weekend is the Super Bowl, and he is here to give us all
lead with that.
All of his predictions here for Super Bowl 50.
Yeah, this
can't. Spencer, who you got?
Well, I know we've seen from my Survivor that I cannot learn from my mistakes. So I'm worried that if you keep me talking about this, it will only go south. I think I'm rooting for the Broncos.
Broncos. I mean, Spencer, was the 2015 Super Bowl bet, was that really the foreshadowing of the entire year, just in a nutshell for you?
You could say that. You could say that it all started with that.
Like, you're making a big bet, Jeremy comes out on top, like it was really...
Yeah, it was a disaster. He didn't collect on that, thankfully. He broke my bank enough. But Yeah, it was a rough year.
Can we just, for people who don't know what we're talking about, can we rehash yeah. that?
In the Super Bowl of 2015, I decided it was a great idea that I would tweet, hey guys, if the Patriots win the Super Bowl and you retweet this and you follow me, then I'll give you $10.
And it was just a play for Twitter followers.
Yeah, I don't know quite what it was, but it was very foolish. The Patriots, obviously, I was like watching intently the end of the game, mm-hmm. and they freaking, like, it was 4th and 1 or something.
At yes.
the goal line. The Seahawks threw an interception. What happened? They threw an interception.
Well, I think this is going to upset Kelly Wentworth if she's.
Marshawn Lynch is on the team, and they decide to save him and just throw the ball. And yeah.
I think they had like 1st down at the 2, and they had like 4 chances to do it. And I think that
so it was even worse. Yeah. Yeah. It was, yeah, I was so mad. It was, and then I started getting like all this paranoia. I was like, wait, could I be like legally held accountable for a tweet? Is this enforceable?
Yeah.
And I was like texting Cass for like legal advice. Not really. But I was very scared. So I like made good on all of that. A lot of people were nice and let me off the hook. A lot of people, I just gave to some charities instead of giving to them, which was nice.
Yeah. Well, that's good because I think that that's sort of like, that moment in Super Bowl 49, I think that is also like an interesting microcosm that sort of, I think maybe, frames, this conversation. Cause I really feel like, you know, going back to that, it seemed like that was such a move that was second guessed. In terms of what Pete Carroll ultimately ended up doing, it's like, well, why didn't you just do this? You had this. Did you, right, you know, right. Why did you zig when you could have zagged? And I really, you know, do get the sense from, you know, talking to you a little bit after the season and listening to, you know, some of the other interviews that you have done. Yeah. You did a really great interview with Dom and Colin where you really talked through everything that I do get the sense that you feel like that, you know, there's, you were really upset with, you know, yourself to some degree. And also, you know, a lot of people who have second guessed decisions that you've made, but I feel like even Pete Carroll, who lost the Super Bowl, like I feel like has walked away from like, all of that second guessing and has been able to, you know, be happy about it. And I really feel like that you shouldn't be as upset about it if you still are. And tell me if I'm you know, misrepresenting anything.
No, this is a very fair representation.
Yeah, because Spencer, that I mean, you've gone out to Survivor 2 times in the last 2 years, and you've placed in 4th and you know, 2nd or 3rd or however you want to look at it, which is, you know, pretty damn impressive to sort of like, as you're beginning to sort of like walk away from that season 31 and sort of like as you begin to look back at what ended up happening, like that's a pretty impressive run.
Hey, thanks. I do feel like way better about it than I did. And I think like you saw the worst of it, like after the finale, I was just like distraught, but I am doing better. And it's, you know, I'm not mad at the second guessing. That's just like the nature of it. Everyone's mm-hmm. going to do that. That's what this is all about. That's what RHAP is about. But I guess like my main thing is I just hope people would give me credit that, you know, I was thinking about these things, that I too realize my mistakes. And I never want to be a delusional guy who just like makes excuse after excuse of this happened. No, it was editing and blah, blah, blah. I'm not trying to be, you know, a Dan Foley. And I'm not trying to be at the same time, I'm not trying to like be unaccountable. Like I'm not trying to be someone who's not going to own up to what I did. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's true. The podcasts I've done so far have been a lot of that. I guess this will be probably a little more of lighthearted fun.
Well, Leah, let's try to have fun. Let's sort of like try to frame it in the content, and we'll you know, get into everything, I'm sure. But I feel like that at this point in time, like I feel like you know, it was a once in a lifetime, or really a twice in a lifetime experience that you've had here. And I feel like you know, we've had so many fun conversations about other things. I'd love to sort of like you know, just go back and hear a little bit more about the experience as opposed to like going into the real and like nitty gritty of every single, what were you thinking on this day? Like I don't want to make this into
a talk about how much I suck at Survivor.
The deposition. Well, you know, it's a It's interesting that you frame it that way, because you come away from it like the outcome wasn't right. But, you know, you went through a very Spencer-esque season. In watching Survivor Kagiyan, I feel like they were really keyed into the story of Spencer Bledsoe. It's always the story of, you know, constantly battling, you know, it's either sadness or euphoria of, you know, things are either incredible or things are always down. And you really did in this season go through a series of highs and lows once again.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think it really was a shift. I wouldn't say this was like Kagiyan, where in Kagiyan it truly was always either high or low, black and white, and my perspective about it was black and white. And it was, you know, finding an idol and then getting betrayed and then winning immunity and then, you know, just whatever went wrong. This time I did feel like there was a shift. I did feel like by a certain point I took a much more reasonable perspective on the season as it was actually happening while I was there. I felt like Merge Onward, it wasn't so much the crazy highs and lows. And like that's when I was out there, that's what I really like felt like I could hang my hat on and feel proud about, that I navigated through the game and I did come from a high and low type beginning, and then I feel like I sort of shifted
you
that
leveled.
Pattern. Yeah, and it's, I mean, of course, like there's so many game circumstances that it's not fair to like give myself all the credit, like, oh, I made the game go differently, when, you know, it's there's a lot of luck. But I feel like at least my perspective got a lot better, as far as I think my perspective was very black and white. You know, in Kagiyan, like I was either ecstatic or devastated. And in Cambodia, I think I got a little more level headed. And I think that did help me play what I think was actually a good game.
So over the course of the 39 days that you played in Cambodia, how much of it would you say was fun? Like, and did you feel that Kagiyan was fun to play as an experience?
Yeah, I mean, Kagiyan was definitely fun. Like the second I met Tony Vlachos, it was very fun from there. It was entertaining, just the characters I was around and just being on Survivor. Like I felt like I had a front row seat and I was watching Survivor kind of, not so much playing it. I mean, I felt like basically I was getting all of these intense, vivid experiences that I had dreamt about. And so I guess this was less of that. Cambodia was less of that. But it was really fun in the beginning. Like there is something about a returning player season where it's like everyone knows the drill somewhat, and so people can just sort of like let go a bit. The tension isn't as extreme in the beginning. We had a lot of fun with each other in the beginning, and then obviously some lows after that. But yeah, playing the game I think was actually better in Cambodia. I think I had a better experience while there.
What do you mean playing the game was better in terms of like the day to day, how things were going? You felt like you were more so much in the dark as you were at times in Kagiyan?
Yeah. And I got to see ideas that I had come to fruition. Like in Kagiyan, no idea I ever had worked at all. It was just like, wait for Tony to go crazy. All right, here's my ticket. I'm safe for another day. In Cambodia, like it was very cool to be able to come up with an idea, think about it, and have the pull to make it happen. And you know, it didn't translate to everything I wanted. It didn't translate to the result I wanted, but that was something I wanted. And I think it was something I got in Cambodia that I hadn't maybe gotten before.
So before things really started to get really tense and stressful in there, I mean, you went into this Survivor 30 finale night and went to go into this green room. And I always think that seems like that must have been such a weird day. Do you have any sort of stories from what that was like, where you're in the green room and you're with a bunch of people, you know, you have to feel really good you're going to be gone, but you feel like then there's a bunch of people that are like, hey, come on, you don't have a shot. You're not really going there. So what was that day like for you?
I don't think I was looking at anyone and saying, you don't have a shot. I think like some people I thought, if I had to guess, I'm going to guess you're not going to make it. Okay, maybe like Brad Culpepper, I thought, didn't have a shot.
Yeah.
But I think mostly, you know, 10 out of 16 people are going to make it. And this voting system is really weird. It's like you vote for 10 out of 16 people. So I was expecting almost anyone could be on the cast. But that was a crazy day. It was like the, it's crazy with like Survivor contestants how like their personalities come out without a word leaving their mouth. Like Shane Powers is in the green room just like listening to music so loudly, everyone can hear it just like bopping his head in his own world. Savage is looking over with like a sneer and like passing his righteous judgment. and we see like Terry and Savage passing the paper back to each other. Like
a newspaper, or they're passing notes?
The newspaper. Okay. I haven't picked up a newspaper since I was like four. Mm-hmm. And it's like the age gaps, the personality gaps, it's all like so apparent there. And you're not talking. So it's a freaky thing.
Yeah, it just feels like it's kind of like the Royal Rumble of like all of these survivors are just like all in one room together. And, you know, you're going to be like watching this episode play out. It just feels like I would love to have been a fly on the wall during that entire day.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. And so you're going through this whole thing and this whole like voting process. I mean, what was the most surreal thing for you about the entire like campaign period?
The most surreal?
Because you have this like all these different fronts going on of like, you know, you're getting yourself ready to play in this game. And then you have all these other people like who may or may not be trying to reach out to you. And then you also have like the people like me out there who want to talk to you. And you have the fans out there who are, you know, being supportive, but they have a lot of questions. So it's almost kind of to me, it's like that you are almost like a presidential candidate, like in that period of time. Right.
Are you saying I should have gone into it just being like, hey, screw you all, you guys, I need to build a wall. I need to everyone.
See, I was glad we got to impressions early.
I guess it was kind of like the surreal thing, I think, was the fact that like all these people were like knew me and were like calling me that I had watched. Like it's still like, I say that, you know, since going on Survivor, I see the people differently. Mm-hmm. The mystique is gone, everything that, you know, people have said before. And, you know, for season 32, like I see them as people, and it's there's not like a mystique, or like, not that I don't think they're cool. I think they're cool, but but there's not like an awe factor. But the people, the old timers, you know, like when Jeff Varner like Facebook messaged me, when I'm talking to T-Bird, when even people like more recently, but before I ever went on, before I applied, like when people are calling me up being like, hey, Spencer, we need to make an alliance. Like it's really that.
Who's that an impression of?
I'm not going to say generic that's an impression of, but that's, I'm not going to let Jeremy get more ammo for making fun of my impressions. But it was surreal. Just like the fact that I was, that like these people that I had just like an idea of them as a character were all of a sudden people calling me.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that you and I have talked about, and I'm pretty sure it was offline and not on a podcast, but there's a lot of survivors out there that are thirsty and they really want to get out there. And, you know, people that probably have no business who getting back on the show are, you know, very eager to make alliances with you, who they saw as somebody who was definitely going back at some point.
Yeah. Like if you had told me in whatever, 2011, that I would soon be spending 20 minutes at a bar at a charity event in Florida, hearing Nalea talk my ear off about how we need to form a pregame alliance. I would have told you to take your pills.
Yeah. And like, how much of that, like during the pregame, were there people like, you know, that are calling you and sort of like, you know, it's almost like that you're being like almost like hit on at a bar by somebody who you're not really interested in. Like how much like patronizing do you have to be doing for people? Because you can't just like say like, you know, thanks, but no thanks. I'm not really interested in something like that.
You're saying like, how do you navigate when people propose like, hey, we need to work together?
Right, right.
Yeah, it's like, I guess you just, it's like Varner says, it's like my answer is yes. I'm doing way too many impressions. It has to stop. I'm going to get a lot of flack for that. But
well, that was one of my questions about, did you walk away from Survivor Cambodia with any impressions that you hadn't had from before?
Oh, yeah. Big time. I hardly knew Jeff Varner. Like, I thought he seemed like a reasonable guy.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, he's still reasonable in some senses, but the guy is like explosive television. He's nuts in a good way.
Yeah.
So that definitely was a changed perception. Kimmy, I didn't know too well.
Mm-hmm.
I got to know all too well.
Yeah.
And then, I guess the main ones were the oldies. No, I'm talking
about, did you learn to do any impressions in Survivor 32?
Oh, wow. I misinterpreted that question. Yeah.
Not who did you change impression of.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't. I would like sit around camp trying to do it, and Jeremy would just like look at me. And I'd be like, come on, like my impressions are funny. And he'd be like, nah, man.
Did he intimidate you?
He intimidated me. He bullied me. He bullied me out of doing impressions. He just shut it down.
Now, it's so funny to me, the Mr. Survivor debate that we ended up having back in, I think it was February of 2015, where when you go back and take a look at that, and I had actually rewatched it about a month ago, of the debate between you and Tony and Jeremy. And you won the battle, but you lost the war on both of those fronts. That the two people that ultimately beat you in Survivor ended up being the people that you...
Yeah, what is that? Can we switch those? Like, you can take the Mr. Survivor belt, guy. I see, at the time I was like, I lost the debate, but I won the war. I won the belt. But now it's like on a new scale.
You were
it's
playing like, the short game and Jeremy was playing the long game.
See, like, I didn't even see there was a long game. I thought I was losing the short game and I was winning the mid game. And then it's like, no, man, you're losing the whole game.
Yeah, but it really is sort of like crazy in hindsight to go back and look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit terrible, but yeah.
Yeah. You know, talking about those two guys, though, this was a question that I had gotten, and I want to give credit to Buddy Moen, who really brings up this question. He wants to know, having played with both, who does Spencer think is a better player, Tony or Jeremy? That could you just compare and contrast those two guys, or the two people that you played with who ultimately won your seasons?
Yeah. So I think Tony's a better player.
But you beat in Mr. Survivor?
Yeah. Well, that's the more important. That's not the but. That should be the lead, Rob. But I'm going to say that Tony is the better player, but I think they're very different. And I think in this environment, I think in this season, Jeremy's a better player. Because I think that sort of one thing that happened in this last season is everyone was so strategic and everyone was talking so much that trust was just so low. No one trusted each other. And it became more important than ever that you just kind of made people feel good when they were with you. And Jeremy's amazing at that. Jeremy's strength, I think, is for sure his interpersonal interactions, just his ability to make someone feel comfortable. And he really did that with everyone. I don't know if Tony's forte is making people feel super comfortable, but Tony's strategic mind, I think, is something else. Like Trish always says, and I think she's right. Trish is always like, thank God Tony decided to be a cop, because if he were a criminal, he would destroy the world. Like he really just, his mind honestly thinks in a way that mine can't, that almost everyone's can't. Like he's one of the only people who would think of, hey, let me give Jeremiah this fake idle clue and just totally flip the script, take control of the situation, tell everyone what's happening. And like, he's the only guy who thinks of stuff like that. And so I think in your average season, I'm more impressed by Tony.
You know, it's interesting because when we talk about the two things, it's almost like somewhat similar, because when we talk about Jeremy, when you say like in a season like this one where everybody is ultra paranoid, Jeremy is the person who like almost like, you know, not to bring LJ up, but sort of like a horse whisperer that everybody's like sort of like, oh, no, there you go, girl. Like, it'll be OK. Like, just relax. And Jeremy, it can make people feel better in that way. But to turn it back to Tony, it's almost like Tony is the person who's making everybody spooked, and he still isn't the person that people were able to want to target and go after.
Yes. Scrap your Malcolm versus Joe versus Spencer crap. It needs to be Tony versus Jeremy. They are like polar opposite ends of the spectrum. I think it is crazy. It's like they represent two very, like the most distinct types of ways you can win, both effective, but Tony is purely the rational, strategic, cutthroat side. And Jeremy is the personal, you know, feeling, emotional side. Mm. And It was so needed in this season. This season totally called for that. It was all about who do I feel comfortable with. Like when you went off to talk to someone and you like they could physically see your wheels turning. And this is like a big flaw of mine that when I'm thinking about strategy or I'm paranoid, it's like very visible. People see me in the shelter, like looking around at everyone like a deer, and it puts them off. And Jeremy is the opposite of that. Jeremy is totally calm. Puts people at ease, makes them feel great. And he is strategic when he needs to be. He has the strategy. He just doesn't exude the strategy, you know?
So on this scale of male survivor winners from Tony to Jeremy, in terms of like where you want to be, you know, we talked so much in the season about your evolution and where, what you were trying to be. Do you feel like you came into this season and you were more of a Tony, and where you were trying to ultimately be was to be more of a Jeremy?
Yeah. I mean, I think I came into the season as a Tony wannabe, and I left the season as a Jeremy wannabe. I think, like, only kidding a little bit, but, I think like it is a spectrum, but I think it's important. Like you shouldn't try to be anywhere other than where you are on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. I think Jeremy would fail to play like Tony, and I think Tony would fail miserably to play like Jeremy.
But I think also part of that to be sort of like, it's one thing to actually be Jeremy and to be Jeremy like, but I think it's probably very difficult and probably an underreported story of how difficult that might actually be to be Spencer and to be 23 years old and to be sort of a person that people look to as sort of like a calming presence. And I really do feel like that, your age in the story. And I think that, you're probably mature way beyond your years, but just as somebody who, you know, has been through this ringer twice at such a young age, like, I think that it's almost like that, it really is just like a crazy thing that you're almost like one of like, again, a hyperbole aside, almost like, one of these, like athletes that comes out of high school and is like thrown into the NBA. And, you know, if you were in a professional sport at your age, like if you were a 23-year-old quarterback and you were making, throwing a bunch of interceptions, people are like, he's going to grow out of it. He's such a young age. But, you know, you've gone through the ringer and gone to such a deep point in the game at 2 points at such a young age. Like, I think that that's such a phenomenal achievement to me.
Thanks. Thanks for saying that.
Well, you've played the game twice. I wasn't even, I think I had just turned 24 at the time that I played the first time in the Amazon. And so to go as far as you did twice, you know, at such a young age, you know, it really is an amazing achievement. And, you know, what I know when I see that, at times like have felt not so great about your performance the second time around. I just think that that's a thing as you get further away from this, I think that it's going to come more into context for you.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. I hope you're right. And I think you're right.
Of course I'm right.
You do. You have the magic eight ball. So
yes.
You can't be wrong.
You can't be wrong. I've always wondered, and this is something that we had never got to talk about during the season, was that at the start of the season, you were like really especially tight with Shireen. It seemed like that was sort of like your number one person coming into that season. How did that end up coming into focus where you guys both felt like that was going to be, this is the right person for me? Because, it's not like you guys played together. You had that sort of backstory together. So how did you guys identify each other as the person who is not only going to be the best person for me to work with, but also the person that you seem to trust the most coming into this?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. I think it's just really naturally as people, we relate to each other and we get along great. And it's just like, she's someone that I have no doubt, like if I had met her at any point, survivor or no survivor, I would have really liked her. Like she's still today a great friend of mine. And I think that we were able to sort of see that through without Survivor clouding it, where we actually met before any of this came up, before it was known that she was going to be in the mix for this. I thought she wasn't. And the fact that we sort of like
when
realized
was that?
That That was at the Know-It-Alls.
Okay.
Yeah. So we hung out that night. And I think the fact that we...
I thought that was her cousin.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Her cousin introduced me to her and so on. And so I think the fact that we hit it off, like, without any expectation of playing with each other, made us realize, you know, that it was genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's really just, you know, something that it's hard to talk through, but it's like something you feel, I guess, that she's just an awesome person. She's the only person from the Dirty 30 who doesn't suck. And
that's those are strong words. Like, do you have animosity towards the Dirty 30?
No, it's like obviously there are plenty that are fine. It's more like the people who have how people have treated her.
Yeah. Okay. So you were being. It's not so much anything that was done to you. You're defending your friend.
No one's been bad to me at all.
Yeah.
I think like the level, like Shireen deserved a lot more respect from them and from the people in Cambodia. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that someone is willing to write her off when she's been so successful compared to your average Survivor player and is like so has done so much with her life. And made so much of, you know, challenges. Like that's, I guess, what gets me going. But no, it's not a personal feud with anyone.
Okay. I'm going to say we might have to get you in the family feud against the Dirty 30.
Put me on the what's the other team? It's the... never mind. Leave me out.
Yeah. You don't have a country in that.
Be a free agent.
Dirty 30 versus Wine and Cheese. You need to start a third tribe. You need the Angkor tribe of.
The Angkor going. I'll get Abby and it'll be great.
You know, okay. Well, speaking of Angkor, you know, one of the things in doing these interviews with the people from Survivor Cambodia, in talking with Steven and Kelly and Jeremy, you know, I feel like the person who has been like the big mystery in all this has been Tasha for me. And really, I think, misunderstood the relationship between you and her in the game. And because, you know, one of the things that I had said after the season, which I know that you were annoyed with, was when I compared Jeremy to Tyson and I sort of mapped that Tasha was like Jervis and by proxy, you were Monica. And I know that you were annoyed.
Nothing against Monica. I just feel like the vein in which you might make that comparison isn't, you know.
Well, the reason why I had made that comparison was because that I felt like that she was always the person that we looked back and said, well, why didn't Monica flip at this point? Why didn't Monica flip at this point? Right. Why didn't Monica flip at this point? And then I think that also she's like, you know, talking about that she was on this, you know, she grew as a person and people sort of, rejected that, and that was the reason. But I didn't mean to be insulting, but that in
I didn't take great offense to it or anything like that. I just think, like, you know, like if you're, I think Monica's great, she's a neat lady, but
she is a neat lady,
but I don't think, you know, Monica wasn't it didn't seem driving the end game decision.
It's not an exact analogy. I was making the Jeremy to Tyson analogy, which I think that maybe coming further away from the season, that might not even be accurate in terms of like talking with Jeremy about his game, which they were.
I think they're both great players, but very different. Yeah. I think like, it's like Tyson is a guy. I guess that he does really make people feel comfortable, but just in a really different way.
Yeah, I think that their social game is similar. I think that it ultimately the path they took was ended up being a lot different, more different than I thought it was in the day after the season when I had made that comparison. But in that comparison, I thought that really, I thought that Tasha and Jeremy were more of the Tyson and Jervis. I thought that they were the pair and you were the person who was sort of the third wheel on that. Right. And like what I feel like I've come to find out, at least from like what Tasha said in the final tribal council, was that you and Tasha were more of a pair and Jeremy was potentially more of the third part of that. So could you just speak to the relationship that you and Tasha had during the game? And I feel like it's something that just was not shown very much in the show.
Yeah. Yeah. No, hey, here I am. I'll push you back to the other direction.
Okay.
When Tasha and I, first of all, never played together until the merge, right? So Tasha had a lot going on when we first linked up. And I talked to her, and like one of our very first conversations, she was very cagey, and she was not lying to me, but being deceptive with me. I was asking her, you know, what's going on? Because Jeremy had come to me and said, hey, there's going to be a 7. That's what I would like. That's what I see. You, me, Tasha, Steven, Kimmy, Savage, and someone else. I think Wiggles. He said that, you know, we have this plan of 7. And so I was talking with Tasha and I said, yeah, Jeremy told me about what he mentioned, the plan he mentioned, like, are you sort of on board with that too? And she's like, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so what did you see in that? And she mentioned like a different group. And I came to learn that she, you know, Jeremy had told her that, but she wasn't like clear on roping me in. Jeremy, I guess, had decided to rope me in, but she wasn't fully like, oh, we're roping Spencer in. She hadn't gotten the message. So I definitely got a sense early on that, you know, although Tasha and I have a good relationship, she's, you know, I like Tasha. I think, she was playing her own game. It definitely wasn't a thing of, I'm going to figure things out with Spencer in light of everything else that's going on. It's like, I'm going to figure out everything else that's going on. And then maybe Spencer works into it. Maybe he doesn't. Then, you know, the game goes on and Jeremy and Tasha actually were, I think, the tightest pair between each other. They, most nights they would get up in the middle of the night and go on the beach and talk through strategy. And I definitely wasn't invited to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think at Final Tribal Council, Tasha realized there was a perception that she was Jeremy's, I guess like servant or something, that mm-hmm. she was just doing his bidding. And I think she really wanted to fight that perception. I think she really wanted to say, no, I'm not that tight with Jeremy. Like Spencer and I are the power couple. So I think that was kind of like her defense.
Okay.
But no, Tasha and I were not, you know, we worked together many times. We weren't really like a tight power couple at all.
Because I feel like even going back to Kagyan, I feel like that is always like sort of like a weird misunderstood relationship between you and Tasha, where I feel like coming out of that season, we used to talk about how, oh, well, Spencer and Tasha this, Spencer and Tasha that. And while you guys were not necessarily working against each other, you guys were probably moving more independently in that game. And then, you know, at times said, okay, well, this makes sense for both of us to be doing that. So I was wondering if, you know, when we heard that in that final tribal council, if that was ultimately the case, if you guys ultimately just decided that, okay, this is a good relationship and we should be working together tighter in this game.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. It's like through both seasons, we've had the exact same trajectory, but it hasn't been this united movement. Like it's been two individuals who have happened to play together and, you know, go through the same path.
So when I spoke with Jeremy, he said that he felt like Tasha was somebody who wasn't being given enough credit for her role in everything. Yeah. Could you just sort of dissect that a little bit of what were the things that Tasha was doing versus like what you were doing and what Jeremy was doing?
I mean, yeah, I think definitely it's true that Tasha wasn't given enough credit. Like she overcame more, I think, to succeed than Jeremy or I did. She came through Angkor. She was on the bottom with Savage. I think she had incredible, had an incredible approach to that whole situation where she came out of it and made a great friend in Abby, which isn't the easiest thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And made her way from the bottom to the top, came back perfectly reintegrated with Bayan. You know, socially she was great and she did it without winning challenges, without finding idols, which neither Jeremy nor I could say. So I think, yeah, Tasha totally deserves more credit. Like it's very unfair to characterize her as someone who is just like sitting around. I think she should have made different moves. I think she didn't play ideally. Obviously, I didn't either. But yeah, I think that she just like socially and in taking basically the situation she was given and doing what she could with it, she did a great job.
Because that final three that you ended up in of you and Tasha and Jeremy, and while I'm sure that, you know, that people, myself included, have nitpicked at different times, like, well, how could you go to the end with Jeremy?
Yeah.
You did end up like that was a very powerful group of three. Because at the point that Steven ends up getting voted out at the final nine, I mean, potentially from the point that you are ending up on that family visit, you know, you could be potentially in the minority of the numbers where, you know, if the, you know, Kelly, Abby, Kimmy, Keith end up getting together, you could end up, and that's probably a little bit, you know, I don't know if Kimmy was ever with that group more so than she was with you guys, but you end up running the table with that group from the point that you guys are left there together at that family visit saying, okay, this is going to be the final three. You guys end up, you know, keeping that. So there is like some sort of structure in that power dynamic of that three. So you guys did work effectively together.
Yeah, we did. I would not say that we were, from that moment when I proposed the final three onward, we were locked in. It definitely wasn't that way. I actually, when I, as Joe was being voted out, my intention was to go with Wentworth, Keith, and Abby.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mind changed, and it probably shouldn't have changed. But yeah, I, you know, we, I guess.
Well, what
we,
made your mind change in terms
realizing
of
realizing that Wentworth and Keith didn't have me in their final three plans?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if Wentworth admits this, but I don't believe she would have taken me to the final three. I think she would have taken Abby and Keith.
You feel like that if you got to the final four with Keith and Abby and Kelly, that they would have voted you off at four, which ironically was sort of like your idea that you had with Jeremy, where you would have, you ideally in your perfect scenario would have knocked Jeremy out of final four. And this was actually something that in my interview with Kelly, we ended up talking about, like your move at the final seven of like, was, did Spencer see himself? If he was saying, okay, well, we got to get rid of Jeremy at four, was he looking at himself and saying like, oh, if I go with this group, I'm going to be the Jeremy who gets voted out at four. And am I better off sticking with the plan to A, either vote off Jeremy at four or be the Jeremy who gets voted off at four, where all I have to do on that one scenario is make sure Jeremy doesn't win at four. Whereas in the scenario with Kelly and Keith and Abby, I have to make sure I am the person who wins at four.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. That was exactly the dilemma that was in my head. And it was more complicated and I misjudged things about it, but that's what I was thinking. It was a conscious decision that I didn't want to be in a situation, and I wasn't even thinking four. I thought it could be even worse, where it would be the final five and I have to win both the final five and the final four to get to the end. And yeah, I mean, I was overestimating myself. I think I was overestimating how much I would be targeted, that that would have been a better route to go. But what I was thinking at the time is better to take the risk of ending up with a guy that I think might beat me than to leave myself in a Kageyan-esque situation where I have to win in order to get to the end.
Yeah. And then with going to that final four, potentially with Jeremy, I mean, I feel like that that was something. And I think that for us on the outside who weren't there, who are just going by the TV show, I don't think that was something that was sufficiently explained by the TV show, that that was a, an idea in your head of, hey, I have to vote out Jeremy at four, because it never was mentioned on the TV show.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. I had a lengthy interview before the final five tribal council. I had a hour long interview where all I was talking about was debating, should I go right now to Wentworth and Keith and say, we need to vote out Jeremy. And it was really tough for me. And I, like, it came down to, if I do that, I thought at the time I would have to win final four. And the way I did it, I thought there was a chance, not an amazing chance, but a chance that I could beat Wentworth if I were able to vote Jeremy out.
And in fairness to the TV show, I mean, you can understand why they don't put that in there, because if you're saying like, I need to vote out Jeremy at the final four, because if we don't vote out Jeremy at the final four, this could be a 10-0 finale. Like, you know, they kind of have to, you know, keep the, you know, they can't have you saying like, boy, this will be a real blowout if we don't vote out Jeremy at the final four, because when Jeremy wins the final four, sort of like kills all the suspense of that final tribal council.
Yeah, they have to build up the, they have to make people think it could go either way. I definitely get that. I'm definitely not saying it should have been portrayed differently.
But hypothetically, in that scenario where Jeremy doesn't win immunity at the final four, like, is Tasha in on the plan of, okay, we'll vote out Jeremy in this spot? Or do you think that she was, okay, so it would have been what, like you and Kelly ending up putting two votes on Jeremy, and it would have, you know, come down to,
I would have gone to Kelly first, and she definitely would have been on board. And then I would have gone to Tasha and said, you know, not in front of the jury, said, you will definitely lose if we take Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope she would side with me. And if she didn't, I would hope that Jeremy, but I think she would. I mean, I have to think she would see at that point. I mean, I had a few conversations with her where I said, are you serious about me and Jeremy final three? And she said, yeah. And I had thought that maybe she really was, but maybe she just didn't feel enough trust with me to say that she wanted to turn on Jeremy. But I was really just thinking at, when it came down to it, when the buck stopped at her, she would realize Jeremy was the person to vote out.
So in that scenario where Jeremy got voted out at the final four and you go to the final three with you and Tasha and Kelly.
Yeah.
I know you feel like you have a better chance, but do you feel like dollars to donuts? Do you feel like you're the winner of the season in that scenario?
Are you talking about me now?
Yes, yes.
No, not at all.
You feel like Kelly would have won?
Yeah, definitely.
See, and that's why I feel like that you shouldn't be beating yourself up about any decision that you made in this game, because I feel like that I always go back to, like, what's the dumbest thing that ever happened in Survivor history? And I have to say that it was Wu taking Tony to the finals, because I always look at it through like, okay, you have there's two doors you can go through. Door A, you win the game, and door B, you lose the game. I don't think you have any decision like that where if I just didn't do this one thing, yeah, I could have
I think you're correct. I think I did not have any one thing I could have changed where I would have won. I mean, yeah. Kimmy would have beaten me.
Like, right.
This jury was not my people.
You don't have a Pete Carroll moment.
I don't. No. I think you're really right about that.
Yeah, so I think that is so much easier to live with than any one thing that if I just could have done this one,
like falling off of a stool.
Right. If I just would have done that one thing, because no, it's like I was right there.
I don't know. It's either way, because it's like if there's one thing, then yeah, there's more. The regret is more concentrated on mm-hmm. that one thing, but you can feel great that you were that close, that, you know, I feel like given there wasn't one thing, it almost speaks more lowly of my game that, wow, you know, Kimmy would have beaten me, Jeremy would have beaten me, Kelly would have beaten me. And look, I'm not trying to like beat myself down,
mm-hmm.
but there's two ways of looking at it.
Yeah. So two ways of looking at it, but it's like, okay, well, there were a lot of things that went wrong. Like, boy, I was almost like, this was, I did better than, you know, there was a lot of things, there were a lot of problems there. I did better than I probably even could have expected. And I know that was something that you talked about with Dom and Colin and Kagyan, that you felt like that you were lucky to get where you were. So it's almost like, hey, this actually turned out like, okay. Like, again, I think, you know, there's reasons, I think, for optimism all around.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's like I said before, I don't, people who second guess, like, definitely second guess. I'm not mad at anyone for second guessing. I just hope that people realize that I was second guessing too.
Mm-hmm.
That I was thinking about these things, that it wasn't some grand delusion that I thought I would definitely beat Jeremy, and then it wasn't a Wu moment. I love Wu, but it wasn't a Wu moment where I actively said, let me take Jeremy to the end, because this is good, I'm gonna win.
Yeah. Speaking of the Wu moment, so your relationship with Cass in the game really sort of culminated in that episode 6 where, ironically, it was Wu who ended up getting voted out, but it was Cass who sort of like reached out to save you. Could you just talk that through a little bit of what that was like? Because she says, she sort of like outs you in front of everybody, like, boy, I don't really know if I could trust Spencer being on my tribe. And you have like a classic Spencer moment of like, Cass, what are you doing? And so, but then she ends up sort of turning around and then coming to you to try to save you. So just, I would love to hear your sort of like first person account of what that was like.
Yeah. I mean, it was really, it was interesting that episode, because it was like, I think Cass, it was much less of Cass weighing, oh, I really want to get revenge on Spencer, but I guess I'll get rid of Wu. I think it was very much like she realized early on that Wu was a good person to target, because Wu was doing a lot of like kind of underhanded strategizing.
Really?
Yeah. Wu was stepping out of the stepping out of the shadows and actually like really playing. He was he came to me early on and said, and I guess he wasn't playing amazingly, but, mm-hmm. but he was really like trying to make moves where he came to me and he said,
is this at Takeo or this is at the third Takeo?
Sorry, this is at the third Takeo. This is when after we swapped, he said, so did you hear about the alliance?
Please rephrase in the Wu impression.
Okay. So, do you hear about the alliance? And I said, no, what are you talking about? He said, so it's you, me, Cass, and Savage.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, that sounds great. I just had a good talk with Savage. We got along. I'll talk with Cass. So then I talked with Cass and said, so Wu told me about the alliance. And she was like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, you know, the alliance, like you, me, Wu, and Savage. And she's like, what? Come again?
So Wu was like making that up?
Yeah. Wu just like made that up. And Cass was like, what the hell? Like, why is he going around like making up alliances, including me in plans that we haven't talked about? Mm-hmm. And so then Cass like got pissed off. She got mad that Wu was trying to I guess like play her or something. And she decided Wu needed to go because mm-hmm. Wu was, she as she put it, she's like, Wu is trying to play cutthroat and strategize, which is a very dangerous thing. So she was like, we have to now turn everyone against Wu. And that's how she got Sierra and Abby. I think Cass was like the driver there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like it wasn't so much that, I don't think the episode even really said like why she thought it'd be good to keep me. At the end, it said, maybe there's a good use for Spencer or something. I don't know. I don't remember it that well, but it was really, I think, about this thing with Wu and Wu really trying to not pull one over, but try to change his game drastically.
And did that really change your perception of Cass as a person? I know that there's so many different times that we had talked, you know, on the podcast and then in the preseason too, of like, okay, you know, your relationship with Cass, and I spoke with Cass, and I think that all of us really didn't have a good handle on what that relationship ultimately is like. You also talked about with Dom and Colin that Jeff Varner always assumed that you guys actually were working together. But
yes,
sort of like just going back and like listening to like what you had to say beforehand, it almost seems like that was all sort of like born out of that, you know, you guys really didn't have anything going on, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like everyone thought we did. Everyone thought it was this massive conspiracy theory. When Varner found out that we voted together, he was like, I knew it. I called it from the very beginning. I read you. And I was like, dude, no, like, no, we had nothing. We didn't even really get along great. Like she was targeting me. I would have probably liked to see her go. Mm-hmm. But another thing that wasn't shown was in that after that swap, we did have this long conversation on the beach and we sort of like made amends where I apologized for a lot that happened in Cagayan. I recognized some hypocritical ways that I'd been thinking. And I think that was a big step to just like opening that door. And it was really like, it was not something where before we had anything cooking. We didn't talk before. We don't really keep in touch now, but we also aren't at each other's throats.
Well, then in the following vote, that's ultimately when Cass gets voted out.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's trying to put together a plan and we see her talking with you in the episode about trying to flip your vote around, which ultimately, because you weren't voting for Tasha in the first place, wouldn't have worked. But did Correct. You take any pleasure at the time of voting out Cass? Because you have this complicated history and it's really that she's a big part of why you're saved in the previous vote. So did it kind of bum you out to have to vote out Cass at that point? Or was it the kind of thing where, you know, from like different things I heard saying about like, you know, I'm just going to vote Spencer anytime I don't know what to do, or I'm like, I'm going to eat Spencer's tears on the island. What did you end up like? And again, that sort of stuff that you might not have even known about till after the season started to air. But did you take pleasure in voting out Cass at that point?
No, I really didn't.
Yeah,
I I didn't. It was neither. It was, I didn't revel in my great revenge.
You didn't marinate in it like Steven with Joe?
No, I did not take a second to marinate in it. It was a big, big mistake. But,
big mistake that you didn't marinate in it.
Well, it would have been a little weird. I'm like holding up the card for Sierra and I'm like, the vote's actually for Cass. Let me marinate in it. I don't know how it would have gone, but it was, I actually, I didn't do that. And I also didn't, I wasn't necessarily bummed. I was saddened by the conflict between Cass and Tasha, which was truly, truly nasty.
Yes.
And I really didn't, I didn't feel bummed. I didn't marinate, but I really, if I'm going to be on either end of the spectrum, my ideal was not for Cass to go home. My goal was, I had been talking to Joe really closely and I wanted to convince him to go with me, Cass, Sierra, Wentworth, Abby, and pull in Keith.
Yeah.
And vote out someone from Bayonne.
When you were talking Joe language.
Yeah. It really wasn't like, he didn't seem willing to do that.
Yeah.
I wasn't willing to totally put my neck out on the line and make an ultimatum and say, this is the way we have to go. So that's why I did what I did. But yeah, no, you're right. And also like when Cass made her pitch to me, I couldn't, at that point, I truly could not have changed it.
But then when the episode aired, did you then somewhat revel in it at the point where you had then the final tribal council had happened? You had seen some of what she was saying about you in the pregame. Did you have sort of like a late reveling in it at the time that the episode aired?
No.
Yeah.
I really didn't. Like I don't care that much. Like I just like there was so much more going on than me and Cass to me in that season. Like And that was also around the time I stopped watching the show. That was around the time I started like the really bad, like second guessing and then feeling like the show was really like bothering my life. So that's when I sort of stopped. So
I'm surprised that early, because I felt like that was around the time that the Steven episode happened. But from the merge that you stopped watching.
Yeah, I ended up watching that episode, the merge episode, like 3 days later. But Savage episode, I didn't watch. And then from there. Yeah.
Yeah. So that must have been incredibly difficult to do, to not watch, because I know a lot of people that you know couldn't not watch the show and they're not even on it. But
it was like my I would turn my phone off at 7 Central Time on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. I would, like, in work it was kind of hard because it was always like the water cooler talk kind of, and like
right
people would like say things about it, so I just went off of my memory of what happened and was like, oh yeah, that was crazy. But yeah, it was hard.
But is that because of the second guessing internally or externally from, you know, the people on Twitter and the people like me and the people that talk about the show? Or is
all that, you, Rob?
not all me. But is it more the external stuff or is it the internal stuff?
It was more the internal stuff, which really is like a bit of a cop out, because it's like internally I'm in control of my internal perspective. So if my internal perspective is bothering me, it's probably because I'm not using internal control of it.
Yeah.
And so it's probably some of both. But if you're asking like, was I reading the forums and checking all the tweets and like Twitter searching Spencer Survivor and getting upset? No, I was, it was really more of me watching the show, my own thoughts.
I just really feel like, and I keep coming back to this, I think that the issue is more with the internal perspective than anything that necessarily happened out there on the island. Like it was, you know, it was not a, you know, perfect game or necessarily like an almost perfect game, but it was still, you know, pretty good. And I just don't think that, like, I mean, there's been so many people that have gone through, you know, had a much worse experience, not to trivialize anything that you experienced.
You're right on. I think this is important. It's like, this is really like kind of philosophical, where it's like the fact that, as you said, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
The fact that it felt so bad really, I think, speaks to a lot of what was going on with me and my relationship with Survivor, mm-hmm. where this game, that it's just a game, affected me so deeply, I think, because I put so much stock into it. It meant maybe more to me in certain ways than it should have. And I think when you are catastrophizing something like that, it can be a result of it representing more than the actual experience. I didn't have a realistic perspective on it. To me, it probably was a lot of things more than what it truly was. It meant a lot of things more than what it truly was. It probably meant a lot of external validation. It probably meant a lot of, in some ways, self-esteem, in some ways, like self-concept.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reaction you see is really like me being upset on those levels, not me being upset just because of Survivor. It's because of what I let Survivor mean to me. And it's like, I think that points me in a direction as far as introspection and as far as thinking about this, where I can reevaluate, you know, where I get those things. And I think that's important. I think that's why I'm not interested in playing Survivor. Why, you know, I'm focused on my life and on, you know, taking an honest look at like what Survivor meant to me and how I can fulfill my needs as a human in a better way.
It's such a great point that you make, because especially like as a, you know, a 21-year-old and coming through all this and sort of being thrown into this, and then everything that happened, you know, post show, and you know, being like literally being Mr. Survivor, and then coming back and then having to go through this vote me back into it. That I mean, of course, like so much of your identity as a 23-year-old person ends up being on Survivor, because you know, at the point that I was 23, I had not done anything cool, and you know, I probably had too much of a, you know, identity.
Come on, Rob, you were a computer projects coordinator. You were a cool guy.
Yeah. So I think that just like even like the things, and you know, that you probably know people like this that get so caught up in whether it's like, you know, their high school or their, you know, different clubs or organizations or, you know, fraternities and whatever. And it's all that's about. And they probably put too much of, and it's not even anything that's on television, like what you went through, you know, two different times, and you have all these people like, you know, tweeting you, and it's like so much of your identity is wrapped up in that. But I just think it's, you know, it's really important to remember, you know, the next amazing thing that you do in your life probably isn't going to have anything to do with Survivor, but I just don't want you to invalidate the experiences that you had. Like, you can still do something amazing next and not have to like completely say that, okay, that was, you know, the old me, that was stupid, like I don't even want to talk about that anymore.
Right You're very right. I think it's super easy to be like, oh yeah, 2 years ago I was an idiot. Like, forget that guy. I'm not that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can still take the positives from it. Absolutely. And you're right. Like, I will do, you know, I think great things in life, and things that don't have to be tied to Survivor, like things that I find fulfilling, whatever it is. It doesn't have to even be anything that would, you know, strike anyone as great, but it just could be great to me. Where like it's up to you. It's internal and external, and it's up to you what you tie your identity to, where you put your control. If you leave it to the external, you're gonna have a hard time. Like, if you leave it to your Survivor identity, it's very volatile. It's not really healthy. And so I'm definitely working on being more internal with that, with taking control internally.
Yeah, because you know that, as much as, you know, the world likes to, you know, bring you up, and there's a lot of people that want to take you down also, and bring you back down to earth. But I just don't want to see you have to like go completely cold turkey with all of this to sort of get, you know, right. Cause it used to like bum me out. Like, when I used to see a lot of people like from the early seasons of Survivor, you know, they'd be like a big deal with Survivor, and then they'd have to like completely, like, you couldn't even like talk to them about Survivor. They didn't even want to mention it anymore. You know, that's not who I am. And they don't want to have anything to be, you know, associated with it. Like, hey, that's not me, or that was me, and I don't even want to talk about it. And I just don't think that that's necessary to sort of like just have like such a break from it to be able to sort of like get that perspective.
I mean, needing such a break from it would be, you know, exactly what I'm trying to get away from, right? That would be like the black and white perspective about it that I'm trying to to move on from. But yeah, don't worry. I'm not changing my name to Wyatt Nash. I'm not gonna go cold turkey. I'm gonna watch season 32. I'm excited. I'm really excited to watch this show. Like, I just want to have a healthy perspective on it.
So this season that you mentioned, the 32, and I know you haven't really gone through all of the bios or anything like that, but obviously you know that it's going to be a brains versus beauty versus brawn season again. Is that flattering for you that they're going to do it again? Or is it sort of like, I wish they would have just left, you know, well enough alone with the original was fine. They don't need to bring it back so quickly.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's flattering because it's like guaranteed that the Brains Tribe will be better than our Brains Tribe. It's like definitely going to be, I don't think it's a matter of we left a great mark and so they have to recreate it. I do think the season left a great mark, but I think it's more about, you know, it's a good theme. It's a good way to split people up. And it definitely, like, any time you're going to make people think about their, you know, we're talking about identities. Anytime you're going to make people think about their identities by giving them a label, it definitely adds, I think, like an interesting intrigue to the game where it totally happened where in our season on the Brains Tribe, we were so complimentary of each other and egotistical. And it's funny. It's like when you're an individual and you're arrogant or egotistical, that's not a good thing. No one likes that. But when you're a group and you're, you know, really full of yourself, then it's okay. It's like if you're the Brains Tribe and you're telling each other, we're so smart, we're going to win all the puzzles easily. That's accepted. When you're the USA and you say America is the greatest country in the world, that's okay. So it's funny, like it changes when you're in a group and you can feed off of each other. So I think when you give people these labels, it makes an interesting story. And it absolutely happened that on our tribe, we were like, we're definitely going to win the puzzles. We got this. We're so smart. On the beauty tribe, they're looking at the water in the pots to see the reflections. On the brawn tribe, they're building the best shelter. It's fascinating to see how that plays out. I think it's a great theme.
If the Brains Tribe is a mess again, what do you think that says about Brains Tribes and Survivor and people?
It says that when Survivor casts people that they want to label as a Brains Tribe, they will be a train wreck.
Okay. All right. Speaking of brains versus beauty versus brawn, let me give you a question from John Johnston, who says that Tony tweeted that without him, you are an emotional person. Tasha has power. Wu is on the wrong side of the numbers and Cass has feelings. I'm sure you must have seen that during the season. What was your take on that in terms of people being perceived much differently when Team TV wasn't around?
It's like you change the problem is like Team TV is one variable and like approximately 10,000 variables changed between the two seasons. But I Tony, you know, he's wise beyond me. He kicked my ass, so I can't question him too much. A lot of wisdom to be found in Tony's tweets.
A lot of wisdom to be found, always. You know, when we were talking about the cast thing, you mentioned about how you were trying to get something going with Joe and you guys felt like that you were both in the middle and there was the scene with you and him talking. Yeah. Joe language. Now, I really haven't spoken much to Joe outside of like, you know, meeting him briefly and doing a couple of exit interviews with him. So I really never got like my finger on, truly, you know, understanding him as a person, really, or a survivor. What was your experience?
Well, you got to watch his GoPro.
I guess, apparently.
That's how you understand Joe.
If you can find like the lost footage.
Oh, you'll understand too much about Joe.
Is it like the ring tape if you find it? Is that what it is?
That's what they say. Okay. And 7 days later, you get a call, you pick it up, and it's like, this is Jeff. Where is Joe? I need him. You took him from me? You can't take my Joe.
Where's Joe and his GoPro?
He comes and kills you.
But what was your experience like with Joe on the island? Because you guys were able to at least have a, you know, some sort of a functional relationship in the post-merge.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, like, I think it was genuinely pretty good. And we worked together. I think it just got dicey as we got further and further down because people realized what we were doing. People realized we were both in the middle, both saying one thing to one side, another thing to another side. And I just think we got to like a breaking point where it got really, honestly, I didn't vote Joe out because he was such a physical threat. I think he is the biggest physical threat challenge that Survivor has ever seen, but I don't think he was going to run the table, and I would have been willing to keep him around a little longer, but it was getting so hairy with us both being in the same role, both trying to do the same thing. And I felt like I got to a point where I just needed to say, I'm not in the middle. I'm with you. Joe's the guy in the middle. Let's get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a game of chicken. One of us had to jump out of the road first, I felt like.
Yeah. And so do you like Joe? Like, have you kept in touch with Joe?
Yeah. I mean, we've kept in touch a bit. We're not hanging out all the time. He's in Arizona. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it was genuine in the game. And he called me after getting voted out to just sort of like ask about that. I think he's still like, we left some things unsettled, and I just let him know that, yeah, you know, everything that happened out there, everything I said was sincere.
Talk to me about Joe, and don't put it in the context of anything having to do with challenges.
So outside of challenges, Joe is very excellent at a lot of things, and, you know, like fishing, whatever. I think he just has like a great degree of confidence. He seems to feel that whatever he wants to happen will happen, which I think is often a helpful trait in life. But that's also kind of how he approaches being a player. He'll approach a group and he'll say, this seems like the best thing to happen. It's what I want to happen. And he's just very sure of himself. So I guess that would be the best description I can give.
Are you saying, is he cocky?
No, I mean, I think definitely some people called him that. But I think it's more just like he's found success wherever he's gone so far in life. His family is incredibly supportive. He has a great network of people around him who've told him he's great. So, you know, in Joe, and this isn't a bad thing, but in Joe's mind, he's great. He's always great. And whatever he does is great. And honestly, that does often result in what you do being great. He's, you know, he made a great merge flag. He went far in the game. I don't want to talk about challenges, but he succeeded in so many ways.
Did it bum you out on the show? Did you feel like that Jeff thought that Joe was greater than you?
Oh, did I get mad?
Did you get superseded?
Me?
Did it bum you out?
Crush?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I when I think about all the things I lose sleep over, that is high on the list. I'll get through it, but I did feel kind of burned by Probst.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk about a couple of the other people that you played with. Let's talk about your relationship with Steven, because that was something that also turned out to be very dramatic in terms of the way that the season ultimately ended up unfolding.
Yeah.
But the relationship, it seemingly like I thought that you guys going into the season would be able to work together really well. You guys ended up on the same tribe, and I was really expecting to see more of it on the TV show, but it ultimately never ended up ended up happening. Were you guys at any point super close in the game, or was it always, you know, just like, you know, good acquaintances?
Yeah, we really were never super close in the game. It was always more the latter. And it was like when we first swapped, he said two things to me. He said, one, that because we're both, you know, involved in RGP and all this stuff, like we probably should be a little low key about that. We probably shouldn't get people's ears perked up to us being a super tight pair. And then the other thing was I was all about, you know, talking when we could and sort of sneaking off and strategizing, but he really didn't want to. He said, I'm going to basically keep talking with you to a minimum, not talk to you much. I think you're okay for a vote, but I really like, I can't give you much more than that. So from the beginning, it wasn't a thing of, oh, Steven's here, we're going to figure it out, this is great. And I had thought about, you know, him as a person that we would work really closely before the game, that I felt like it would be great to work together, but I really never, he was not willing to do that after the first swap. And then when we reconnected at the merge, it was a little different and he was more willing to, you know, have these conversations. But yeah, because we had already missed so much time, we only got a couple days to work closely together.
we never established a trust where like he had much tighter allies than me.
So do you feel like that it was more that Steven was like was like spread too thin and had a lot of other options, or do you feel like it's the kind of thing? Because I know for me personally, and I think that this is something that holds me back in life, that I feel like, you know, when we're talking on the phone, like we're talking and Spencer's my me and Spencer, we're great friends, but then like a week goes by and then I don't hear from Spencer, and I'm like, oh, Spencer probably doesn't like me. And so it's like, is it just like where it's like the lack of, and that has to do with my own insecurity, but it just like the fact that if he's not talking to you regularly, are you starting to feel like, okay, I can't really take what he's saying at face value because he's not putting the time in? Or is it more so that you like feel like that he really isn't wasn't as dedicated to you?
Yeah, no, it wasn't a thing of he's not talking to me, therefore his plans must not align with mine. Maybe that did play a factor. I can't be sure, but it was a lot more of, you know, we had a conversation and he said he was down about the game. He felt like he wasn't playing well, and he felt like there were only a couple people he could beat. And he mentioned that, Spencer, there's no way I would beat you. And I could like see him realizing what he just said. Like he like sort of, and it would, you know, to be fair to him, like it's, you're there all the time. You're going to have these moments where you're not, you know, thinking about the game necessarily. And I could see like him realizing the implications of what he'd said, that like, that really clearly indicates I'm not in his final three plans.
Yeah.
And I wasn't in his final three plans. It was much more of that than feeling like, oh, Steven's like moved on, he doesn't like me. It was much more of just like a true, I think, realization that going with Steven would be a hard path to the end.
Yeah. And I know that in your preseason interview, the one that you'd done with Dom and Colin, also you had said that Steven, you knew from the get-go, Steven was going to be, was a self-interested player, somebody who was always going to not lose sight of the finish line and what the ultimate goals were. So was that something for you that was, you know, always sort of in the back of your mind, that Steven is probably going to be, because he knows the game so well, that...
Yeah. It was, yeah, it was. I mean, when we first started before the game, Steven was very upfront that he didn't want anything resembling a pregame alliance, that he wasn't doing that. Mm-hmm. He would talk through ideas with me, but that, you know, very much for him, the game was something, you know, separate, that he wasn't going in with any deals. And so, I mean, like, based on him explicitly saying that, based on me knowing him to be a good player and a self-interested player, the combination of that and him, you know, saying he didn't feel like he could beat me, I felt like that was enough I needed for a strong hunch, as much as I needed for a strong hunch that it was going to be a hard path to the final three if I went further with him.
Now, when you voted for Steven the first time, when Jeremy played the idol for him, you put a bell on the card. Was that was that to say to Steven, was that a shout out to him being the knowing is know it all? What were you trying to say to Steven with a bell?
Oh, I wasn't really trying to. It was just sort of.
Or was
like,
it the poop emoji, as some people have speculated?
It was not, unfortunately, the poop emoji. it was dumb. It was just like, you know, how someone would draw a smiley face on their vote card or something, or like a frowny face.
Yeah.
It was just like a lighthearted thing. You know, I didn't mean for it to be insulting or anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all it was.
or was it a nod to the listeners?
Yeah. I mean, well, I definitely,
like, was the audience, was it Steven or was it the people at home?
It was probably more the people at home. It was like, it's like, it was really just like an expression of like, you know, that we have this like RHAP thing. You know, it was not like a happy occasion, but at the time I also was fooled. I thought that Steven had been talking about voting me out. I thought that Steven and Kimmy had been talking about voting me out.
Well, that's a great point.
Yeah.
All right. I do want to talk about that, Jeremy's role in all of this, because in like listening to interviews that, you know, that you and Steven have done, and talking with Steven, and I really wish I had gotten into this more with Jeremy, but Was Jeremy playing both of you guys against each other?
Jeremy was, but it was actually more Sierra that did it for me as far as duping me, where Jeremy came to me early on and said, "Steven's gunning for you. Don't worry, I've got your back." I took it with a grain of salt. Then Sierra came and said, "Steven and Kimmy are both targeting you." And I was like, huh, so two separate people have said this. And then I found out that Kimmy did indeed have a conversation in the shelter where she talked about voting me out. And so Kimmy being confirmed as guilty of that, and it might not have actually been her intention, but she did mention my name. That combined with it coming from two different sources, lumping Kimmy and Steven together on that, I just didn't take the time to compare everyone's story. I didn't take the time, most importantly, to talk to Steven about it, because this all sort of broke late in the day before tribal. That had me thinking there was a high probability Steven was targeting me, or Steven was interested in getting me out. And he hadn't been targeting me. It was just an unfortunate combination of suspicious things that made me think that.
And do you feel like that people were also in Steven's ear of that you were also trying to target him?
I don't know for sure. I think Jeremy was, but I don't know if Steven really fell for that. I feel like Steven probably knew I wasn't initially. And then I came to be once, you know, all of these rumors started flying. But yeah, it was really a lot of things coming from a lot of different sides to make me, you know, fooled in that situation.
You mentioned that Kimmy was mentioning your name, and back at that final six tribal council, you really like laid down the law of, okay, here's what's happening. Here's what we're doing. We're putting our votes over here. And, yeah. You know, we want to make sure you're voting for however, you know, you better be voting the way you said you were going to vote, and really calling out Kimmy. Was that sort of because of that? Like, had you sort of like been feeling like Kimmy had been trying to get you out from that point, and that was sort of like letting a little bit of that animosity like out at that point?
No, if Kimmy had been trying to get me out, that would not have entered my mind that let me unleash on Kimmy. Like, I never was mad at Kimmy, and I never would be mad at someone for targeting me. I saw it very much as I thought Kimmy was making a good move in trying to get Jeremy out at that point. I thought it made sense for her. And so I certainly wasn't in any way mad. My goal there was really to just be confident. I felt like if people, and really, I think in retrospect, what I should have done was A, phrase things a little better, and B, given my immunity to Tasha or Jeremy before I did this.
What would that have done?
That would have made me not the guy with the immunity necklace. Like, you know, it's easy for the guy with the immunity necklace to say, "We're voting three strong. We're not going to defect. So you better vote with us." It's a lot harder for the person whose butt is actually on the line to say that.
Yeah, it's always the person with the immunity that is really trying to stir things up in that final six. It was Jervis, I think, that had immunity back in that blood versus water when
it's a kryptonite. You don't want to feel so safe. You just like,
say whatever you want.
Yeah, it's true. It's like I could say whatever, and it allowed me to. Like, because I had immunity, I saw this crazy tribal council as just this fun, crazy survivor event that I was watching. I didn't have the empathy for the people who might be about to get voted out because I couldn't quite relate as much because I had immunity. So it was, I just, you know, I wasn't thinking well about it. I was, it was foolish to do it the way I did it, where I have immunity and I say things so forcefully. But ultimately, my goal was to convince everyone that yes, we were going to vote together so that we wouldn't have to. And I didn't know these idols were about to get played. So my goal was that, you know, we wouldn't have to draw rocks, that we could just get either Kimmy or Keith or Wentworth voted out.
You've really had a front row seat at some amazing tribal councils.
I got the merge in Kagiyan. I got this. Yeah, it was. I'm like so lucky to be on these two seasons. It's crazy how good the seasons I've been on have been.
Yeah, you and Tasha really have gotten to see some amazing fireworks, some of the best tribal councils ever. You talked a little bit about getting lost during that final six tribal council. I mean, just like, what's the biggest thing that from us watching at home that could we not even appreciate at that tribal council?
Probably that we were figuring things out live. Like, it's cut very fast. You see one thing go to another, and it's like, okay, now this happens, now this happens. But we were, it was a quite slow process, slower probably than the people on the couch for us to figure out what was happening, where we were like, okay, so these items were played. So if there's a revote, then wait. Keith, and like no one realized it all at first. Like when I finally realized, wait, Keith's going to be the only guy who could draw a rock. I whispered in Jeremy's ear. I was like, hey, Jeremy, like Keith's going to be the only guy who can draw a rock. Let's just shut up and like, vote the way we did before. But it was all like in real time. We were reacting and like Jeff looked uncomfortable. I think Jeff was like, because honestly, like the rules of Survivor, it's easy, like as you introduce idols and multiple idols and all this stuff, to enter a scenario where the rules haven't quite like been touched on. So people don't know them. Keith didn't know what was going on. Keith did not know, like no one got it at that point. I didn't get it. No one got everything that was going on, because this isn't a scenario you think about often, you know? It's new territory. And it's like in a show that has been 31 seasons, it's crazy to like think about a scenario that hasn't been thought about. It doesn't happen very much.
I really did like how they came out with the magic marker in the picture and sort of like said, okay, well, then this is what's going on here. And this is what's happening here.
Jeff got excited about that.
Yeah, it was really great. It was very fun to be in the audience that night. And then Jeff sort of like watching that all play out live and explaining it, because he didn't miss a beat on the explanation. So when you brought up Keith, what was it like to play the game with Keith Nail as somebody, you know, who've got to spend a lot of time with him in the post-merge game?
Awesome.
Yeah, really?
It was awesome. Keith is an awesome guy. He's like, are you talking strategically or just
no,
like,
I don't care. I'm more interested in the personality than,
Keith's
we could have a very short conversation of what was it like to play the game with Keith strategically, probably.
Yeah. Well, he is such an easy guy to get along with. Like no one just likes Keith, and just his way of talking and expressing himself. Like he's super emotional. You don't realize that about Keith, but he's super open with his emotions. He gets, and it's really like touching. He'll like at Tribal Council, I don't think a lot of this made air, but you know, Jeff asked question after question after question. And when it got to more emotional topics, like Keith would be the guy who would be, you know, breaking down. Like he's a sincere guy. And just his like his expressions, like I've talked about this I think before, but like we, you know, when you're like sitting around camp and someone's walking down the beach and Keith's like, what's he doing down there, just mumble farting around, like and like before every vote he would,
that could be the hashtag.
I think that would be a solid choice. mumble farting. Like he, before every vote, he really hated strategy. Like he actively hated it. Like if anyone tried to talk to him before 4 p.m., he'd be like, hey, just come to me before the vote. All right. I don't want it. All right. Just let me be and tell me what we're doing. So basically like when the vote was about to happen, like we'd tell him a name. And then right before the vote, like his way of making sure everything was good was he'd come up to you and he'd kind of like wink and lean in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he'd whisper like, hey, we slick?
We slick.
And I'd be like, yeah, Keith, we slick. So that was awesome. He's just like a fun guy.
Yeah. All right. Well, you also played with Abby Maria in the season, and Abby Maria was like a bit of a thorn in your side through a lot of this game, from the beginning of the game all the way back at
a bit of a thorn bush in everyone's side.
Yeah. So you know, you started out on the same page as Abby Maria, but it was obviously very difficult to stay on that same page with Abby Maria. But you know, you had, I'm sure you saw Survivor Philippines, you knew a bit of what you were getting into. So what was what was the disconnect there?
I did not know.
You know, and you watch that season and you have everybody saying like, you know, in that season, they were voting her out at the final five. They're like, we can't take it anymore with Abby Maria. But I'm sure, and I myself as a player have said like, oh, I think I could get along with Abby Maria out there. I think it wouldn't be.
Yeah, so you think, Rob.
So, and that's the thing. It's sort of like, I'm trying to think of what that is of like, it's just like the mirage. It's like, oh, it's only like 30 feet away. I could go grab that thing. And it's just like a trap that you walk into. So just how, what is that like in the first person of going through that?
No, you nailed it. She's a Brazilian dragon who starts out as like a Komodo dragon. It's like a little like lizard. And then you like, oh, she's cute. And she like grows and doubles in size. And you're like, okay, she's still like manageable. And then she becomes like a fucking like fire breathing, menacing, like the thing from Harry Potter that like almost kills him when he's playing.
That's what Malcolm said.
I was tournament. No, Malcolm said the Dementors.
So, oh, okay. Like, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Abby was like, yeah, I think there was actually a
different Harry Potter creature.
Harry Potter's mixed up, but no, like so it's like every book of Harry Potter, you could probably find an analogy for the Prisoner of Azkaban, the Dementors, and then for the Goblet of Fire, she's the enormous dragon. But it's like you don't realize, and I also thought the same way, like, okay, and I had met Abby, and she's nice in real life. You know, mm-hmm. She's actually really charming and outgoing and positive when you see her in everyday life. So I was like, yeah, definitely. I got the impression that she got a certain edit that maybe she wasn't so bad. It was the group of people. She wasn't such a terror, but she's everything the legends tell you times 10. It's unbelievably hard to interact with Abby Maria. Like, there's a scene of me like talking to her, trying to convince her not to vote for Joe and to vote for Steven, because she like decided that she hated Joe, and so she had to vote Joe out.
He's moldy.
She as good a reason as any, right? I was like pleading with her. I physically was getting a headache, like a piercing headache, a migraine, based on trying to like hold it together. Oh gosh.
Debbie Downer.
I mean, do you have any other good Abby Maria stories that's something that we can't even appreciate as people who watch the show?
Oh my gosh. Well, oh yeah. So I don't know if Steven probably already told you this, but the, you know, like in that reward when it's the night challenge, the reward.
Yes, yes, yes.
Did he tell you this story?
I don't think so.
Okay, good. So there was a scene where he's trying to decide which of the three baskets he's going to open.
Right.
He's debating the right answer, and he opens one, and Abby's like, oh, that's the right answer. So she takes it.
Yes.
And then he's like, oh, no, that's not the right answer. And he gets another one, and he's like, sorry, Abby. When that aired on the show, I thought they were going to air everything, all of the fallout of that, because it was incredible, but they didn't air it. They just left it at that.
Yeah.
So we got back to camp, and Abby's like, pacing around the fire, just sort of like staring, like she looks like a murderer about to like take her next victim. And Steven like looks up and is like, yeah, Abby, by the way, I'm sorry about what happened in that challenge. And she's like, oh, I had already forgotten about that. But if you bring it up, yeah, what was that all about, Steven? You want to make me lose? And he's like, no, you see, what happened is I thought I knew the right answer. And every time he tried to give like a justification, like a rationalization, she would just immediately kind of off like, oh yes, no, I'm sure that sounds like what you were doing. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. He's like, no, Abby, I feel like you're still mad. No, I'm not mad at all. I'm fine with it. If you want me to lose the challenge. No, but Abby, I didn't. That's what I'm saying. Oh no, Steven, you really don't need to talk anymore. Like, yeah, she ran that guy ragged.
No, she does do like a really passive aggressive thing of you just don't want me to, and like, no. Oh,
gee, I gave you the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, it's very tough to combat that, where like that's like sort of like her default move is like passive aggression.
But so. No, it was unreal though with the Steven thing. It went on for like a day or two. Two days later, I swear, she was still talking about this challenge.
Yeah, that is very funny. Also, the other big player in the post-merge game is Kelly, who we really haven't talked about very much. Yeah. But I think that was an underreported story, how closely that you guys had been working together, at least in the beginning of the game. So what was it about Kelly that made you feel like that she was somebody? Because we didn't know much about her coming into the season. What was it about her that you felt like that she would be a good ally?
So I don't know if we actually were that close in the beginning. I felt like it was a lot more after the merge that we got closer, and not even necessarily just like game wise. Like we had some, you know, conversations just sort of about life that we are both, you know, children of divorce, where there were a lot of things that we sort of could like relate to one another. You know, talking about parents and step parents and all of these things that I felt like I sort of like got her in a way where like I could understand, like, it's hard to explain, but I felt like her, like I saw myself a little bit in like some of her mannerisms and in sort of like the way that maybe she could be like guarded sometimes with people, that she's way better socially than me. She's way more outgoing, easy to talk to. She makes people feel good talking to her, but I think she does sort of keep things on a certain like surface level, which is something I do. And we talked about sort of stuff like that, and without getting too much deep into it, we related a lot. And so I felt like after the merge, we definitely like had kind of a bond going, which ultimately I think was made things a lot harder, how the game played out.
But ultimately you felt like that she was more loyal with Keith and potentially Abby Maria than with you?
I thought she was loyal to her chances of winning. And I thought in her mind, the best way for her to win would be to go to the end with those two.
Mm-hmm. You felt like that she felt like she couldn't beat you?
No, I think she probably thought she had a good chance against me, but had a better chance against Abby.
Got it.
So, yeah, I mean, and maybe I am wrong, but I think like basically I got a sense that I was not on the top of her like final three plans.
Mm-hmm. Which is certainly makes sense why somebody would want to take Keith and Abby Maria, with all due respect to them, potentially to the end. Do you think that did Keith have a good shot to win? Do you think that the jury would have rewarded Keith? Like, we've talked about different people that were surprisingly popular or unpopular with the jury, but would Keith have been somebody that would have been rewarded by this jury?
Potentially. I think he had a shot. I think if the final three is Keith, Tasha and Abby, Keith will win. My vote goes to Tasha, but I think Keith would win. So yeah, I think he absolutely had a shot.
I love hearing the stories like the Abby Maria and Steven thing, of something that was just like a funny thing that happened that didn't ultimately make the air. Are there any other things? I mean, you have such a good memory when it comes to this stuff. Are there any other things either from the beginning of the game at Takeo or at Bion when you were over there, or even in the post-merge game?
Man, it's... like, I'm sure there are, but it's just hard to like bring something to mind. I know before the game, I was trying to mess with Steven, and like when we were walking through the airports and stuff, I would try and like whistle. I'd be like, and he would, I don't know if he picked up on it, but he was just like stone faced. He would just ignore me. But I would like in like the holding rooms and everything, I'd
try to send him a musical message. So you were giving him.
Steven's the best. Know it all. Turns out Rob isn't that good at all.
And usually, I'm sure that's not his ringtone.
Yeah, no, I think he must have had the phone on vibrate. So I needed to fill that void that was left. Oh my God, Rob.
Yes.
I definitely have a story for you.
Okay.
Have you heard about Varner in the beginning of the game?
Flatulence? No, I have not. He was mumble farting around.
Emphasis on one of the two words there and not so much the other. Okay, so I don't even know how it started, but he, like, it became a joke that he was like having a hard time. He was not feeling well. The food wasn't sitting with him, whatever. And he, like, you know, most people might be a little discreet with these matters, but Varner let it fly. We were like about to go into tribal council, and it's just like this enormous roaring sound in the jungle.
Which vote is this?
First vote. We're about to vote Vetus out, and Varner is just like, blasts one, and he just starts laughing, just like cracking up, and all the girls are like have their heads down. I'm like, oh man,
was that what Terry Dietz was talking about when he's talking about a Varner bomb?
I don't know. Probably. Terry was not happy with it. He was just like shaking his head. Like it was like definitely the sheltered people especially just had this like look of disgust. Like he would do it around camp and it would be like Terry.
Well, obviously the beach people, there's more of a breeze on the beach. The shelter people, it's exactly. More, yeah.
They can deal with it. The breeze, the beach people are okay, but Wigglesworth is not having it. She's just like, This is what Survivor has devolved into. 31 seasons.
It wasn't like this in season one.
Richard Hatch didn't even do this. And he was like, and so there was one moment in particular. First of all, like after the first tribal council, Varner is like loving this. Varner just like loves anything that makes the conversation about Varner. So he's the camera's on him and he just lets one rip, points at the camera, looks stone cold serious and says, "That one was for you."
What just bit my ass?
And apparently that just like took on a life of its own. But the highlight of it all was there was one day Abby was very upset. She was in the shelter. I don't know if it was about Bracelet Gate or if it was what it was about exactly, but Abby was very upset. Varner was just standing around by the shelter. He walks over, walks like in front of the shelter to in front of where Abby's sitting.
Yeah.
Stands with his hands on his hips, puts his belly out, and just explodes. And Abby is just like, her eyes double in size. And she's like, "Oh my God!" And runs. She just runs.
You're moldy.
She runs.
Oh, wow. And then he was still able with him and Terry to get her on his side?
That's the magic of Jeff Varner. He's that good.
He's that good. Wow.
I was so distraught this didn't make air. I was so sad.
You felt like this could have been a whole storyline.
This would have been the best thing ever. It would have hurt Survivor's image as like a family show, maybe, but it would have been the best.
You mentioned that Kelly Wigglesworth was very turned off with Jeff Varner. And I've heard you talk about in interviews that you and Kelly Wigglesworth did not get along too great. What was Kelly Wigglesworth's deal?
I don't know, man. Like she just from the very beginning.
Were you excited to work with her?
Yes, I thought it was awesome. I thought it was cool. And I actually had talked about this with Shireen before the game. I was like, "Isn't this cool? We're about to play with Kelly Wigglesworth." And she was like, "Meh."
Oh, really? I feel like Shireen loves all the old school players.
No, she loves Sean Rector, but the buck stops there.
The buck stops there.
I think it was like her alliance or whatever. Maybe like her talks with Varner, they had said they wanted to get rid of me. So maybe she had just sort of made up in her mind that I was not someone she liked. But like from the very beginning, she did not like me at all. And I really couldn't explain it. I don't think I did anything mean to her, but like she was like complaining, like Spencer's not working hard enough around camp. He'll start projects and not finish them. She really wasn't a fan.
What and then projects were you working on?
Oh, like building the shelter. Okay. No, I wasn't like programming out there or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then after the first vote, I went and sort of tried to mend fences a little, and I said to her and Terry, like, "Hey, I'm happy to explain sort of what I've been thinking. I hope you guys know I've nothing against you guys." And she was like, "No, you know what? It's okay. From the moment I looked at you, I sort of could tell that your word didn't mean anything.
Oh.
So it's fine." And yeah, it was like a lot of that the whole time. But you know, the craziest thing was after Final Tribal Council, when I got to Ponderosa and everyone was not, you know, the nicest to me, and Kimmy's, you know, like laughing at me crying and whatnot. Kelly Wigglesworth was the sweetest person to me. It was so strange. Like she hated me the whole game. But after that, she
knows what it's like to lose in a Final Tribal Council. Then she was like, welcome to the club.
I think that's what it was. It was, she like was getting me food and was like, "Spencer, it's okay. Like you played a great game. You're a good guy." She like really like brought me off some low lows.
Right. Yeah, she's like, "I know what it's like to be like a 23-year-old person who loses in the Final Tribal Council." Cause she lost, and you know, it was a 4-3 vote, but they counted it there. So, she knows what that's like.
How it felt, right? Yeah. Yeah. The 4-3 vote where you know is maybe the same as the 0-10 vote where it's not revealed yet. And it's like,
Right.
She was really nice in that, and she's been fine to me ever since. So
yeah.
I don't know a thing against her. I don't know what to make of it all, but I'm fine with Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah, I mean, that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, I guess, but it was still weird how she just like hated me and then magically was ready to be empathetic.
Because all of a sudden she saw you in her.
Yeah, I wish she had saw herself in me before.
Or you hadn't lost in a final tribal council yet.
Yeah. Hey, at least she didn't call me a rat. I can hold my held my ha- I can hold my head high.
Now, going back to, you mentioned Bracelet Gate. I mean, that had to have been really surreal as it was going on. Could you just talk a little bit about what was going on? I mean, you guys get there, the game is just starting, and it's day one, day two, and, you know, it must be moving so fast, and you're so excited to be playing. I can't believe we're finally back out there. And then the Abby yeah. Maria bracelet thing is going on.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I didn't have the best front row seat for it. Other people were more privy to the conflict. I sort of just saw like the back end. But yeah, it shattered the faith, I guess, that Abby was going to be who I thought Abby was going to be fine. I thought it was going to be okay. And it really, like, that's when the Komodo dragon turned into the monster, the Brazilian dragon.
The Brazilian dragon. All right, Spencer, I want to give you some more of these questions that I have from the listeners. Okay, so many fun questions from people. Nina Stoddard wants to know, this season, did you do more, less, or the same amount of crotch framing as in Kagiyan?
It's tough because, like, Tony's a cop, but there wasn't really anyone around in Kagiyan to document my crotch framing.
Now, Jeff Varner accused you of crotch framing. Now, what did the crotch framing ultimately mean? That you were deceptive? That you felt like this was your island?
That I thought it was my island.
Yes, you're the Troyzan move.
Troyzan didn't make it, so I had to crotch frame it up. So it was like, yeah.
You're kind of doing some crotch framing, I gotta be honest, that we have the video open of this Skype call. There's a bit of crotch framing happening.
The laptop...
I have to be honest.
I'm on my futon, and I was eating while I was trying to talk to you, and then the laptop got hot, so I put it down. Come on.
I'm just calling it. Jeff Varner isn't here.
Are you about to start like letting them rip? Is Nicole going to have to move? Like, fumigate your house? Are you
what just bit my Varner? Ass?
So what was that like when you, so the pregame press, and this has
I
to
like
be,
how I just stopped doing it, what you were saying I was doing. I just got very self-conscious about it.
But that has to be really crazy, just to speak to this broader point of, you went out there, you played the game, and then the amount of pregame press that was coming out. So it's like, okay, you had this 39-day experience. You're still like a little like raw and salty about what had happened, right? And then sort of like, okay, now you're starting to read interviews, and now you're finding out what people said about you before the game even started, right? That has to be kind of crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I mean, like, I guess there was a little moment where it like cast with like the jar of tears. Like, really? Like, so dumb. But I there were like... a few things that were surprising. Like, I had no idea, and this is just speaks to how badly I read it. I had no idea Varner was on like just the so gung ho about getting me out. Like, I thought we had a perfectly fine interaction before the game. Like, we talked on Facebook, but he was, I don't know, he just like had it in his head that I was definitely going to work with Cass and Tasha. And the craziest thing about it all is like, he still is convinced. Like, even after everything, he still thinks, like, Cass and I were in cahoots, and he's like, you and Tasha had the tightest pregame alliance ever. But yeah, no, the pregame stuff was wild. I loved that when they released the pregame alliances video, and it's like cuts from person to person talking about like what they're up to.
Yeah.
And it's like,
our buddy Mikey the Chimp.
That was so good. It was like, it's like Varner sent like, yeah, Wentworth and I held her baby. And
Wigglesworth, right?
She's like, Wigglesworth. Gosh.
Don't start a rumor. A
long podcast. And she's like, I'm a hermit. I don't know him. That was awesome. I got a kick out of that.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. So yeah, the crotch framing is not something that you're out there intending to do.
No, man, it's just I guess I'm just like, that's just my my MO. Like, it's a subconscious thing.
Yeah.
I gotta see if there's a section in Varner's FBI book that tells me how to fix it. I don't know.
Fix it. Okay. This is from Chandler McCorkindale, who wants to know, I haven't seen a fireside chat in a while. What did Tony have to say about your game? Have you talked to Tony since the end of the season?
Wait, did he not see the excellent fireside chat that I posted after Shireen got voted out?
Well, what did Tony say? He was making fun of you that you were crying.
Yeah. He's like, so it was funny because like I feel bad. Like I forgot to respond to him after he texted me after the premiere and was like, hey man, good job. You're looking good. You're talking with everybody. You look great. Playing well, man. Mm-hmm. And I didn't respond. And so then it just cuts. The very next thing is his text after the next episode where I'm crying about Shireen. And it's just a picture of me crying. And it just says, are you kidding me? All caps. He's like, are you literally a I think that's like my best fireside chat ever.
No, but ultimately, the way that it ended up ending, did Tony have anything to say? Any words of encouragement?
Yeah, no, he was really nice. He was like, he told me that he felt upset about it all, that he felt for me. He was super supportive and definitely like pumped me up a bit.
Oh, that's nice.
He's a good guy. Tony will call me a vagina, but at the end of the day, Tony is like a good friend. He has your back.
All right. Speaking of Tony as well, Andrew Kirk says, I'm sure Rob is going to ask you this, but what do you think of the special idol, which you can combine two idols into one? And is that better than the Tyler Perry idol? What do you think of this? Now, I don't know how closely you follow the twists for Survivor 32, but apparently that if you have the hidden immunity idol, and if you have two hidden immunity idols, you can play them together to be one Tyler Perry idol.
I think that's awesome. Because it's like, it's more reasonable, I think, than the one Tyler Perry idol that you just find. I am, you know, I'll always say I'm all about twisting the game, not doing too many things at once, but trying things. I love that. And could you clarify, like, if when two people do this, does one person become the owner of the Tyler Perry idol, or is it for both of them?
I'm not sure exactly how it goes. So hypothetically, let's just say that, okay, so let's just say it's in Kagyan, where let's say Cass didn't flip her vote. And say Tony and LJ, they both have an idol, and say they didn't play them, and that works. You guys get Jeffra voted out. I'm not sure if then after the vote, if Tony can stand up and say, okay, I've got an idol. LJ has an idol. We're going to put them together. That's Tyler Perry idol. We're going to use it on Jeffra. Like, I don't know when you have to.
That would be a bit.
Because you play it after vote.
First of all, the Tyler Perry idol from Kagyan, Tony could only use it on himself. Mm-hmm. So that wouldn't, even with that Tyler Perry idol, even if he had that Tyler Perry idol, he couldn't have saved Jeffra. But I don't know if it is the case that it, like, they both have it and whichever one of them is going to get voted out is saved by it. I think it's great. I think that's like the more elements of the game you can introduce that will put people in a position where they have to work together, mm-hmm. or it's really like they need to work together, maybe despite the fact that they wouldn't otherwise. It's an opportunity for a good show. And that's the whole concept behind casting for conflict. You put these people together and they kind of have to like figure it out. And so I think if you use this twist to put people together, you know, you already have three tries, you have swaps. The more layers of that nature, I think that you can make people have all these different groups to choose from, the more you complicate the game, the more you make the game sort of like how it was in Cambodia, where people are very strategic and goes all over the place. And it resulted in almost every vote being a blindside. I think it's a recipe for success.
And it'll be interesting to see, like, does the one person have to be holding the both of the hidden immunity idols at the point that they get voted out? Or can, like, if one person has a hidden immunity idol and they get voted out with it, could another person throw them their hidden immunity idol? So, I mean,
they need magnetic hidden immunity idols that literally physically combine.
Yeah, they need awesome. Like, sort of like, they're both like, it's like two like crescent moons that you put them together to make one.
That'd be so great.
One that really is the ultimate one. Okay,
it's too bad Russell Hance had to play 10 seasons ago, not now. This is his time.
Okay, well, great, because I got a good Russell Hance question. I'm not sure if you've been following this from Twitter this week.
Probably not.
This is from Nina Stoddard, who says, please settle the debate. Which zero vote crybaby is better, Steven or Russell?
Okay. I did see this. Steven wrecked him.
So earlier this week, there was a tweet from at Survivor Poll, or I'm sorry, Survivor Polls, they go at Viver Polls. Again, they can workshop that Twitter name a bit.
Getting a little fancy there with the lingo.
Yeah. Wanted to know who played the best game that got zero votes at Final Tribal. Steven Fishback or Russell Hance? That was the poll that was tweeted out. And Russell Hance replied to that, "This is laughable that this crybaby is beating me. Some of y'all need to rematch me, I guess." So Russell tweeted that out. And then also then Steven tweeted out an animated GIF of Russell when he gets eliminated in Redemption Island and says, "Which crybaby?" Yes,
that was good. I don't think Russell has anything after that. That sounds like game, set, match.
So who do you give it to, Steven or Russell,
for who's a better player,
who's the better zero vote crybaby?
Oh man, I mean, Steven is better at crying. I think Steven has a bit, like, Russell wouldn't even show us his face when he
cried. He put his face,
Steven really had, let us in.
Steven owned it better.
Yeah,
okay, I agree. That was so funny. That was really, I have to give Steven a lot of credit on that one.
Steven's the best. Know it all.
That was a really good job.
Know it all of Burns.
Dying that. Yeah, that's that might be in the running for tweet of the year so far.
Yeah, I ship that.
We have to ship it. Ariel wants to know, on day one, when you saw you were with Shireen, what was the original master plan going to be if you two had stayed in power positions? Have you talked this through?
Like, talked through every person?
Like, 18 well, through well, give us a, at least gonna... at least a sense of, so where was it going then after you guys voted off Vetus?
So I think, like, we wanted to, in order to get PG on our side, PG was in the middle, in order to get her more like loyal to us, I think we wanted to vote Abby out. And then we wanted to take that five. I think at some point Varner might have gone home just because he was targeting me.
Varner bombs.
Yeah, but that he was too much of a force to be reckoned with. We were no match.
Okay. Levi Peterson wants to know, what was the most surprising thing when you watched the season from TV? And again, you only watched half the season from TV.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I watched more than half, but I think like it was surprising that it was just like a hard story to tell. It was hard to show...
A lot going on there.
Yes. Like, there were so many strategic conversations around merge time, just so many plans going on. It was incredibly convoluted all over the place. And you couldn't really tell the story as it happened because there's just not enough time. It was so insane that, I mean, you just kind of had to pick and choose the storylines. It was, I mean, and that always happens. But in this case, I think it was more extreme, where strategically in particular, it was so all over the place and there was so little trust that I felt like the game almost came around like full circle, if you will. Because in the beginning of Survivor, it was a lot about who do I like, you know, who's fitting in with the group, who helps around camp. And then, you know, strategy develops, idols are introduced, and as the show ages, it's about alliances. Like, okay, I trust this person because they're in my alliance. But in this case, the word alliance didn't mean that much, hence the whole thing voting blocks. And as alliances, sort of as people lost this faith in alliances, it almost came back around to the original, how do I feel about this guy? And it became very much about, you know, what Jeremy was great at.
So why didn't Kelly win?
Kelly Wigglesworth, that's a good question. She was robbed, that's all I can say.
That's interesting. The voting blocks, you buy into that? I feel like that in some of the people that we talked to in the post game, they said, voting blocks, that was just like a red herring. But you feel like voting blocks was real?
Yeah, no, who said that? Because I think they were very real.
Tasha.
Yeah, no, I disagree. I think the voting blocks, I mean, it is a little arbitrary because it's like, it's not that different from Alliance. It's just an Alliance that has less promise of, oh, this is us till the end. And the reason, I think, was very
simple.
It's
more of the hookup than the dating.
Yeah, exactly.
The Tinder of Alliances.
We're in a world with Tinder where it's like, you know, I swiped Jeremy to the right, he swiped me to the right. We can vote together right now, but it's probably, you know, we're not going to... elope, and we're not going to be telling our kids, yeah, we that's how I met daddy. I swiped him to the right.
It's the Netflix and chill of alliances, the voting blocks.
Yeah, but it's very like, I think it's very logical why it happened, because it's like, in this environment where everyone's strategic, you don't trust someone to truly be with you to the end if it's not in their best interest. Mm-hmm. You know, I talked about, I trust Steven to always do what's in his best interest. You could say that about way more people this season than you could say it about most seasons. And I think because of that, no one was taking it to the bank, oh, this is going to be my group to the end. And that was the reason for voting blocks.
Steven's more of a voting block and chill kind of guy.
Yeah, but Steven was ahead of the curve, I think. Steven's the guy who founds Tinder. Yes. He was there before it was cool. He's on all the new ones. He's on whatever. I don't Grindr. Grindr,
I think, is something different. I think Grindr is there's something fundamentally different there.
I should be more familiar with these things before I talk about them, probably.
Okay. Edwin Johnson wants to know, obviously, we need to know your thoughts on the Gilmore Girls Netflix revival.
Yeah, this is probably the best news I've had in a long time.
So what are they doing? This is going to be a reboot? Is it going to be a new series or a new season, like X-Files? Or is it going to be like Fuller House where...
I'm not sure. I think, it's you know, Alexis Bledel and Lauren Graham are back. But I'm not sure if it's going to be still... It's probably still going to be called Gilmore Girls. But I think it's basically just they carry on the show at a much later stage in life. I haven't looked too much into, you know, if they have the same writers and everything, which was like the huge strength of the show in my opinion, but I think you know, as long as a lot of the elements are the same, it's good things are in store. If there's any time to get into Gilmore Girls, Rob, it's now.
Okay, get in now. And you're still up for a Gilmore Girls podcast?
Yes, it is coming. I'm sorry it hasn't already. But yeah, Angie, Cons, and I have brainstormed. We have a Google Doc. Gilmore Girls podcast is imminent, I promise.
All right. What did you think of my decision to hold off on Mr. Survivor for this upcoming year? As the reigning Mr. Survivor, you thought it was a solid decision?
I think it's a good decision. We don't have to talk about me being a bad Mr. Survivor.
You got off easy that there's no new Mr. Survivor campaigning of like, I'll be better than like you came in and talked about Malcolm.
Yeah, no, I ragged on Malcolm, and now there's no one gets to call me a hypocrite. I just get off scot-free.
At least not for a year.
Yeah, well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, I guess.
What should we, should the title just be vacant for a year?
The belt is at my apartment. I mean, that's kind of the barometer, right?
Mm-hmm. So the Mr. Survivor possession is 9/10 of the law. Is that how it works?
I don't know. We could have like a holding period or something. I don't know who the default
ladder match.
I mean, maybe Team TV needs a turn. We can skip Jeremy's second place because he won Survivor. He doesn't need it. So
yeah,
Tony's probably already blown his money already. So he needs a little boost. We can give him.
Tony was upset with the fans for not voting him Mr. Survivor. He spited them. He didn't want to do a podcast during Worlds Apart. He said, no, the fans didn't vote for me.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, he's a sensitive guy, you know? You gotta feel, Tony has to feel the loss.
They didn't appreciate him, so then he said no podcast for them. All right, and then, so what's going on? How's everything going with you and Marcel? Everything's good?
It's really good, yep. She just walked out, actually, but I would put her on for a second, but I don't know where she went.
She brought you a soda?
Yeah, she did.
That's nice. That was nice. I can't remember the last time Nicole brought me a soda.
Yeah, I don't know. It's we're still in the early going. Things are good. It's still soda gathering level of relationship.
I appreciate that while you have it. That's nice. That's nice. And besides work, anything else fun going on that you're doing? I'm assuming that work is fun.
Works fun. Yeah, I'm liking my job a lot. I'm learning a lot.
Probably for you, anything that you're not getting like mean tweets from people is fun, right?
Yeah. Hey, I'll take it. It's been awesome moving past, you know, all the negativity of Survivor, remaining to, you know, holding on to the positivity. I'm looking forward to watching the new season. I'm working out more. I'm learning some programming, a lot of good things going.
So well-rounded.
Projects. Yeah. Trying to be.
Yeah.
Going to start some meditation.
Whoa.
Yeah. I don't know if Vetus will be willing to teach me, but I might have to find another outlet. But
okay. Well, I do want to talk to you about that. That's something that's interested me for a long time. So it's good to know that you're going to keep watching Survivor. Luis Johnson was worried you were going to turn into a casual.
No, I never. I mean, at the moment, yes, I'm a little casual, but I'll catch up.
There's nothing going on. There's nothing.
Well, there's the cast. I haven't watched all the cast videos, which I will do eventually. But I'm also really excited to be unspoiled for a season.
Yes.
I love that I'm going to get to watch the season like purely. It's been a while.
Be fun. All right. Spencer, all right, so you're going to go with mumble farting for the hashtag?
It's got to be, right?
It's got to be. All right, in honor of Jeff Varner. Jeff Varner is going to be my first recap guest of the season coming up in a couple of weeks.
You got to ask him about it. He loves it, too. I had no reservations about sharing that story because I think he's as proud of it as anyone.
He's proud. he's a proud man. All right, well, Spencer, thank you so much for coming on and talking about it. Keep your head up. That this has been a lot of fun. We heard a lot of really funny stories too.
Yeah, no, it was fun, Rob. Really fun talking to you. Thank you.
All right. Well, all the best to you. We look forward to word of when you're going to talk Gilmore Girls at some point on Post Show Recaps.
Is coming.
Right. All right. And then you can follow Spencer on Twitter, but I don't think he's not tweeting much these days, right?
Hey, shh. I gotta build back up.
You can catch Spencer. You can catch Spencer on Twitter. He will be live tweeting the Super Bowl with all of his prop bets.
Hey, if you retweet me and follow me, and the Broncos don't win the Super Bowl, I will not give you $10.
you should have at some point like if you are to retweet me and if Jeremy wins Survivor, I will give you $10 or whatever it is. Could have made some money there.
You don't play with fire, Rob.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, Spencer, all the best, buddy.
Thanks, man. Talk to you later.
All right, everybody. There you have it. The young lad back here on Rob's podcast. That was very fun for me to talk through everything with Spencer. You know, we did it a little bit differently than we did some of the previous interviews that we did where we went through almost every single decision. But just in listening to some things that Spencer has said in other interviews, I got the sense that he really wasn't dying to really, you know, pick the bones clean of like second guessing every single decision along the way. So I felt like that this was a lot more fun of a way to approach it. And I hope that you guys liked it too, because it was definitely a fun couple of hours spent for me talking about this with a great friend of the podcast. So here's what we're going to do next. Got a couple more podcasts coming up this week. I'm going to be speaking with the creator of the Jersey Shore, Sally Ann Salsano. She is the head of 495 Productions. She's got a bunch of different reality TV shows that she is always working on. She wants to talk about some of the new stuff that she's doing. And through podcast one, they said, hey, you want to talk to Sally Ann Salsano? I said, okay, sure. Going to talk to her and then also check in with Sophie Clark. Hear where her head is at heading into the big Survivor family feud this weekend. Plus, we're also going to talk about what she's thinking about Serial and Making a Murderer and all that stuff. We're going to check in with her later on this week. Plus, we did a podcast about the sociology of Survivor. We're going to speak with somebody who teaches sociology, and that is going to be later on this week to talk about how sociology is relevant to the conversation of Survivor. So of course, then, as I mentioned, Sophie's getting ready for the Family Feud, because the Family Feud is going to be this Friday, getting ready for Wine and Cheese versus Dirty 30 Family Feud, all here on the podcast. What a huge week. We had Spencer, we had the preview, News AF. So everything is happening. The countdown to Koh Rong is on. Definitely looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments about this podcast, and hope you're subscribed for all of the future ones at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. All right, everybody. That's going to do it for us here today. Looking forward to hearing what you think. Take care, everybody.